With the 36th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Miles Jack, linebacker, UCLA.
That is an awesome pick. I mean, he's a draftable tailback. He's a top five pick. All the rumors were Jacksonville in the first round, and they came back, traded up, got him in the second.
I've seen the guy line up number one receivers. I've seen him cover tight ends. I've seen him play running back. I've seen him flat back offensive guard. So he's got a rare combination and skill set that we just felt like it was time to pull the trigger. The risk was worth the reward.
This is honestly the place I wanted to be at. I was telling everybody, you know, before the draft, like, if I could choose a place to come, it would be Jacksonville, just with the, really just starting with the head man, Gus Bradley. He's an honorable man. Me and him connected really quick. I felt like, you know, I could trust him in everything, and just where the program is heading, I feel like it was a great place to be a part of.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It's Jaguars Today live here at Everbank MD, and Jeff Lagerman here with you. Final pre-Christmas show with you logs here.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, man. We're dwindling down in the final few weeks of the season, and obviously a lot going on now. We got a lot more to talk about. We thought we might have these shows going on 2 weeks from now, but instead they got right down to business. You know, it's funny. We listened to Miles Jack there in the intro. Tyler compiled the stats. 8 snaps. Out of 54, or out of 84, a possible 84 on Sunday. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to practice. To you know, every player when they play in a game, they get a grade sheet. You know, so I don't know what the grade sheet says on Miles Jack versus, you know, a Dan Scuda. I don't know what their goals are as far as what Miles Jack may do better or Dan Scuda does better. I know that they talk sometimes about, you know, the run game versus the pass game, and one is better at the other. You know, so yeah, I'd like to see Miles Jack on the field more.
Is this a time when you should look for that? I mean, just 2 games left in the season. I know Doug Marrone wants to win football games. Why wouldn't you, right? I mean, you're the interim. You want to put as good a mark on your record as you can.
You're assuming that, you know, that Miles Jack gives you the best chance of winning.
I'm not assuming that. I'm saying, even if he doesn't, with what you have invested in him, with the fact that your record is what it is, and you're not obviously going anywhere, you know what I mean? I mean, is it worth the mistakes he may make right now to further his development by getting him more playing time?
Well, then you're going back to what I was talking about earlier.
I know what you said.
Anointment.
Right. I get it, but it's not like we're not anointing him in September. Like, hey, here's your spot. It's more like, hey, let's see what you got now after hanging around all season long.
No, I see what you're saying, but, you know, I've always believed that, look, you know, when players deserve to play, typically they play, and I don't think there's any kind of agenda that's behind Miles Jack only having 8 snaps.
I don't think they're trying to hold him back or anything like that.
So, you know, look, this defense is playing pretty well. 65% of defensive snaps typically are nickel-based, and Miles Jack would have to replace Paul Posluszny or Telvin Smith to really gain more snaps. I don't know exactly how many snaps that they had in regular base personnel against the Houston Texans, but it wasn't many. You know, when the Texans ended up not having C.J. Fedorowicz, it changes their packages entirely. I mean, they essentially have one tight end that they trust, which is Ryan Griffin. And so that takes the base personnel and lowers the number of snaps that you're going to be in that personnel. So that was a large factor in Miles Jack having 8 snaps.
All right. Well, obviously, we're not going to reflect on the game this past weekend all that much. It's more the changing landscape of the coaching staff here and what's the future going to hold here in Jacksonville. If you could sum up, you mentioned, you know, Gus himself said maybe there were times he needed to have that guy say, hey, you know what, different approach here. Maybe coaching him up is not the right way to do it. If you were to point to something, maybe it's that as the main reason why it never clicked here for Gus Bradley to win more football games. If you could boil it down to that, what would it be?
Well, I thought that last year, you know, I think my expectations going back to last year, and they were 5-11, you know, my expectations were 7-ish. You know, and I don't think they were that far off. But defensively, they didn't get better last year defensively. They didn't get better personnel-wise. My expectation was this year, based on what you had last year, which was an improving young offense with a quarterback that had taken huge steps forward, a wide receiver base that appeared to be taking major, major steps forward. My expectations this year is that the offense wouldn't pick up where they left off, but they would be effective. And so the number one reason why the wins didn't come about this year is the play of the quarterback. I mean, Blake Bortles has taken a step back. I mean, that's reality. You can sit there and want to pin it on, okay, well, the coach is this, or, you know, this happened or that. Look, I mean, that's the number one thing in football is the play of the quarterback. It also didn't help, but that's one reason. It's not the only reason. Chris Ivory had an undisclosed injury early in the season, was taken out of the lineup. Then he's, you know, not healthy. He's not effective when he comes back, and he's got a hamstring. T.J. Yeldon is not a carry-the-load type of player. The offensive line didn't pick up where we thought it would in the running game without Chris Ivory. So, I mean, the offense you can point to this year and say that's the reason why there wasn't a big step taken forward in wins and losses. Defensively, this football team has taken good steps. It hasn't taken the one step you want to see it take, which is starting to control some tempo of a game. Playing very well, but, you know, you kind of expected that. You know, the expectation was this year for this defense was that they would start out and hopefully finish middle of the pack slightly better, you know, which last year they were, what, 27th in the National Football League in yards allowed. Huge improvement in yards allowed, but the one category that they haven't gotten better at is points allowed.
Right.
And takeaways have taken a step back. You know, did the offense have something to do with that? Did the opponents not have to press because they're – you know, they're not playing from behind? Yeah, I think that probably played into some of that. You know, so there's a number of factors that do that. Coaching, you got to say that that's part of it, but it's not all of it. You know, you can't sit there and say it's all Gus's fault because it's not. It's not. I think it's got to be, you know, every part of it has to be exposed. And I think Caldwell did a good job yesterday of accepting some responsibility and spreading the responsibility around, because there is no one person that the record or the results fall upon.
Granted, but when your record is what it has been, or whether you're looking at the 2-year period or the 4-year period, it's still going to happen. You're still going to replace the coach in the National Football League.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. Yep. You know, I mean, look, I mean, when the record is what it is and the expectations were what they were, it's a heck of a lot easier to replace one component than it is to replace others.
All right,
so I get it.
We got Logs in studio here at Everbank today. As always, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. We'll have open phones for you throughout, and we'll discuss what Gus Bradley with Dave Caldwell and Doug Marone, the new interim coach of the Jaguars, had to say yesterday. But more importantly, let's look with an eye towards the future and what do the Jaguars do, what kind of coach, whether it be Tom Coughlin or anyone else that would come in here, what is the best fit in terms of style, personality, and all those things. We'll get that from Logs as we go on through the course of the next 2 hours. If you've got specific questions, you can tweet them to us at MD_1010XL and at Logs56LOGS56. And just hit us up on the phones, the Facebook page, you name it. You know how to get in touch. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Why now?
Well, because he didn't fire on Monday, even if he won. But we need to start the process for a new head coach.
It was a weird one. A little bit to me, anyway. They decided after the Minnesota game, we're going to fire Gus. I guess the timing was bad.
Well, yeah, let me add this to it, is that, you know, I don't know if it was necessarily like, okay, right after the end result of that game, okay, they made the decision right
there. Right, that's what I'm saying. Maybe it was like midweek they decided, yeah, like, let's let him coach it out here.
Because midweek was, you know, the conversation I think happened when Dave was with Shad,
sure,
and Tony Khan at the league owner meetings. And so the decision was made there, and Dave was a little inaccurate in saying that, you know, he wanted to be fair to Gus and honest with Gus and let him know right away. Well, he didn't really know to let him know right away. It was a couple days later. But regardless, here's the thing. A lot of people criticize the timing of it, you know, Gus Bradley being on the plane ride home. You know, was it uncomfortable? There is no good time to let somebody know that they're being relieved of their duties.
So, right after the team banquet.
Yeah,
that was Garrard.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, you can't find a perfect time to do it. And Gus Bradley is a very unique individual that, you know, look, there's nothing uncomfortable when it comes to Gus. And so there was no uncomfortableness on the team plane flight back whatsoever.
Like he said, and, he got a, kind of a chance to say goodbye to the troops, you know, and have a little camaraderie and all that.
And, you know, he could say goodbye to some of the players, you know, without having the opportunity to do it in front of them, and was able to do it on more of an individual basis to where he talked to players, players came up and talked to him. And even after the plane hits the ground, you know, Gus is getting hugs and well wishes from people on the plane. And that's just the type of person he is. There is no uncomfortableness with him.
Yeah, I look, first-class guy. Nobody questions that. But it bears repeating because he is such – honestly, Jeff, I know very few people that I would say have the character of Gus Bradley that I've met in my entire life. From what I know of him. Now, I don't see – you know, I don't follow Gus home. I don't know what he does behind closed doors. But he's been consistent. Day one, never change.
Never change a bit.
Never change a bit.
Nope.
And everyone who's ever dealt with him says that. That's one thing. He's the same guy every single day. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to be respected about that. I got a lot of respect for Gus, the man. It was time to make a change with the coaching position. He gets the deal. He knows it. One thing before we go to the phone lines here, I wanted to mention, you and I were talking about this off the air this morning. Dave Caldwell brought this up yesterday. This question was brought up, and I saw a lot of reaction on social media that I felt was misinterpreting what he had to say. In the official transcript, they put in kind of the gist of the question. It's not a word-for-word question, but on if Dave Caldwell sees himself hiring a candidate he wasn't comfortable with in the interview process, but others were, here's what Dave Caldwell had to say to that.
Could you see yourself hiring a candidate that you may not have been comfortable with in the interview process, but others were?
Yeah, I did that with Gus. You know, not that I wasn't comfortable with him, but I had no prior experience with Gus. I had no prior, you know, relationship with him. So, yeah, that's what's right for the organization, and that's the way I've always been.
Okay, clear as a bell to you and I that what he was saying is he didn't have any comfort level with Gus prior to interviewing because he had never met the guy.
He didn't know him.
He didn't know him at all. Right. And what he was saying was the question was being asked in a way, and that was pretty almost word for word in the paraphrase, but it was being asked in a way, in other words, hey, you know, kind of, you got a relationship with, you know, Mike Smith, Kyle Shanahan, these guys. Is that, how much will that influence your decision making? He's like, look, I'm keeping an open mind. I didn't have that comfort level with Gus in the beginning. Clearly, these guys worked as closely together as I can imagine most GMs and coaches could dream about doing. I mean, really.
Mike, I'm here to tell you the relationship that they've had and the amount of communication that they had was fantastic. Through the years. Fantastic. Now, I don't know what it was like near the end here, when Dave obviously is talking to Shad, et cetera, but I mean, the working relationship that they have had for, you know, the 4 years that I witnessed firsthand was fantastic.
And by the way, next time I have Dave Caldwell on, I'm sure we will shortly after the season ends, I'll let him clarify for himself, but some people on social media were taking to the part at the very beginning where you talked about, I wasn't comfortable with Gus, meaning he wasn't comfortable with the hiring and that it was forced upon him by Shad Khan.
Shad Khan
knew nothing about who to hire at that point in time. He made his decision. Dave Caldwell, you're my guy. Mark Lamping, help me vet you. Now you tell us who the right guy is. Shad Khan, look, he wanted to sit in. He wanted to make sure that he felt like this was the right guy. But it was Dave Caldwell
who made
that hire.
You know, Dave Caldwell was the one who was kind of leading the charge, so to speak. But, you know, Shad Khan, I think, doesn't rely just on one person's opinion in a matter like this. I mean, I think that he was leaning on Dave, but I'm sure that he was gathering information from many places and sources. I mean, that's what you want done, is as many opinions as you can get. So I don't think there's any way to misconstrue his statements there that he was saying that I didn't know him, and so there wasn't a comfort level when we walked in the door together for the very first time.
Right.
But clearly, Dave became very comfortable with Gus and was all for hiring Gus Bradley because, and a lot of people say, well, why didn't he hire Greg Roman? Because he thought that Gus Bradley was the best hire for this football team.
I think he blew him away.
Yeah.
You know, and remember the timing with Greg Roman. Remember, I believe, was San Fran winning the Super Bowl that year?
Yeah, they were, you know, highly successful. And Greg Roman was a big part of it. You know, Colin Kaepernick was at, you know, the top of his game.
I remember interviewing Roman at Media Day at the Super Bowl that year and asked him about that. Did he think he was going to be a candidate for that? And we talked about that. So that was the timing of it. He didn't want to wait necessarily, wanted to get it done. But I think it was more like when the right guy walks in the room, you're like, wow, it just clicked. And the idea that Shad forced that hiring on Dave Caldwell, no. I think, is such crazy misinterpretation of the comment yesterday. I just wanted to put that out there because I was really – it was so clear to me, and I was so surprised when I heard people interpreting that way.
Let me kind of expand it because you're talking about timing and the Super Bowl. Greg Roman was being talked to by you and was still in the mix, right, at that time, or it was soon after the mix.
The hiring might not have been done at that point in time, and it was something like, would you be interested? What's your relationship with Dave Caldwell? Right. That kind of thing.
Well, the timing of that Super Bowl, right, and so. This time around, I think what Dave and Shad are looking to do, because you know they were asked the question about the timing of it, and also specifically about the Los Angeles Rams. Did that move have an impact on your decision to go ahead and do it now? Yes, it did, because if you go back to when Gus was hired and Gus was trying to assemble a staff, look, I'm not saying that his first staff was a bad staff, but you know, you're not getting the pick of the litter, so to speak, when you're assembling a staff at that moment in time. And so I think that wanting to be ahead of the game, to be the leaders in the clubhouse, so to speak, with having the opportunity to get a head coach in place to where that head coach can then, when Black Monday does eventually happen, which is the day after the last regular season game, then they can hit the ground running, have somebody in place, whether it be right at that point or soon after, so that they can start to assemble a staff that they believe is A+.
Right.
And so the Rams move definitely influenced it, and a lot of people say, well, you know, maybe they want Jeff Fisher. No.
I was honestly a little surprised at that, because I know you don't want to, while the job is still filled, you don't, most guys with any kind of self-respect will not interview for a job that's still filled. Once the opening is there, they'll come in to talk to you. And other than Tom Coughlin, there are not many guys, I suppose a few college coaches, that would fall into the window of guys that you could talk to now, because any of the coordinator types that have been bandied about.
There's more than what you think. Mike Holmgren, Mike Shanahan. I mean, if you're talking about names that have been around the National Football League, there's a lot of people that can be talked to at this point in time, and Tom Coughlin is in that mix. College coaches are in that mix.
All right, by the way, Gus is hired on January 17th, so he was probably already the coach at that time at Media Day when I spoke with Greg Roman. All right.
But it still goes to the point that, look, you want to be able to assemble the best staff possible, and the way to do that is to be hiring when the last regular season game is over with.
All right, let's get to the phones for the first time today at 641-1010. Calvin on the north side going to lead us off today. Hi, Calvin.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
I want to make a quick comment, and then I really want to ask Jeff a question. First, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility, if we did get a veteran quarterback, maybe offer a fourth-round pick for Phillip Rivers or something like that. But here's my main question. In the coaching search, we hear about offensive-minded coaches, defensive-minded coaches, with Mike Smith being consideration and Daniels in New England. But my question is, Jeff, is there really a mentality that you've seen from coaches that – do you see a difference in the coaching philosophy itself? Because if Blake is the guy that we have to correct, will they feel like, hey, we got to get an offensive guy that's going to help our quarterback moving forward? Or if you go with Mike Smith, are you saying it's open season, let's do that? But I'm just curious, does it really matter, offensive mind, defensive mind, when it comes to the team concept?
Well, that's a great question. Do you go offense or defensive minded? You know, like I'm a big believer in that you've got to have a great leader. And great leaders are the ones where it doesn't matter whether he's an offensive mind or a defensive mind. Now, look, when you assemble a staff, you want to have great minds, great coaches that can help a quarterback. Does it help if your head coach has an offensive mind and your deficiency right now is on the offensive side of the ball? Sure, it would help. But would it necessarily be the answer? No, because great leaders are what you want in that position of being head coach, because – a great leader at the head coaching position can make an offensive coach even better. He can make a quarterback even better. He can make players better. That's what you want. The best possible leader, and also from a standpoint of X's and O's, that you can get. period, bar none. That, I think that's what makes Bill Belichick such such an intriguing guy, and why he's had such great success. Bill Belichick is involved in every aspect of the game plan, offense, defense, special teams.
Calvin, thank you for the call. I would warn you to be a little more realistic. If you're talking about trading for a veteran quarterback, Sam Bradford, who's never done anything in the NFL, went for a first rounder and a conditional fourth rounder to the Minnesota Vikings. And Philly had already drafted their quarterback of the future. What in the world makes you think that San Diego wants to part with Phillip Rivers anytime soon? And I know people are going to say he doesn't want to play in L.A. Trust me, he'll get over it when they dump a boatload of money in his front yard. Phillip Rivers is not going to get traded by the Chargers, and certainly not for a fourth-round pick. There would be a feeding frenzy. Half the teams in the league would be
lining up.
Are you kidding me? So be a little realistic here. It would take more than that to get an unproven guy away from a lot of teams. You know, people talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I get the age difference, but Rivers is, I believe, 33. In a league where guys are playing much more routinely to 38, 39, 40 years old, that is just a pipe dream. So, all right, just wanted
to. Nothing wrong with a little pipe dream every now and then.
You can have a pipe dream if you want to, but I don't want the rest of the listening audience to think that's even plausibly remotely possible. It is not even close to reality. So, you know, set your sights a little more realistically, I would say. 641-1010 is the number. We'll take more of your calls on the other side. Jeff Logman in on a Check the Tape Tuesday. So to speak, a Check the Tape Tuesday. I'm not going to check too much tape here talking about the coaching situation with the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today live on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey with Jeff Logman here on the Sacramento Bees, Matthew Barrow, putting this humongous tidbit out there. I'm kidding, but it is a tidbit. Jags poised to sign outside linebacker Marcus Rush from the Niners practice squad. He was an undrafted free agent out of Michigan State back in May of last year. So breaking news on the undrafted bottom of the roster.
He's got a good name.
Spot.
Outside linebacker, Marcus Rush.
Will he get more snaps than Miles Jack on Sunday? Or on Saturday?
That was funnier than it should have been.
It's that time of year. I mean, when you're a 2-12 football team and players get injured, look, there is no postseason, so you're going to be putting guys on IR, which means that you can steal players from other teams' practice squads and have them at your disposal going into next year. And so the Jaguars are going to take advantage of that. I mean, they did that in the first couple of years, and they're going to continue to do that now.
All right, welcome Marcus Rush, and we'll see if you can get 9 or more snaps this week. Let's get to the phone lines because we've got some interesting ones coming in here at 641-1010. We'll start next with Jeff at the Beaches. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'll try and spit this out as quick as I can. You guys have talked a lot today about comfort, about Gus making people comfortable in front of them, whether it was uncomfortable on the plane, whether Shad Khan was comfortable with the hire, whether Dave was comfortable with somebody he never met before. But as a fan, I can tell you I'm uncomfortable with Dave Caldwell getting to pick the next head coach. I think he should be replaced. I think he's done a pretty poor job. The fact that it's better than what Gene Smith did is, you know, not good enough. But my question for Jeff is this, and it's related. Jeff, have you ever been in a situation as a player where you're looking at the coach who's trying to coach you, whether it be a head coach or a position coach, or maybe not you, maybe somebody you knew, and you were thinking to yourself, not saying it out loud, man, I know way more about this than the guy who's trying to tell me about this?
I've never been in that position to where I thought that I knew more than a coach. I mean, the amount of time that those guys spend, the depth of their knowledge of the game itself, the X's and O's part, no, I've never felt that way. Now, have I felt at certain points as a player that I had maybe a better answer on certain things that weren't X's and O's? Maybe, you know, but I don't think that anybody else is any different. You know, when you're 22, 23, 24, 25 years old, I mean, don't you have know-it-all?
I was the smartest man in the world.
Absolutely. You know, but, I mean, as far as X's and O's, I mean, I don't think I never felt that I knew more than a coach. You know, but let me say this. You know, I totally understand what you're saying about, you know, you're uncomfortable with where this team is at, you know, and so am I. And
but specifically with the general manager, because I think there is a very valid argument to make that,
that's fair.
You know, he hired the coach. He hired, he picked the quarterback, right?
Well, and
right now, neither one of them looks like they were the right answer.
Well, and he's, you know, your statement, Jeff, about, look, you're not comfortable with Dave Caldwell picking the next head coach. You know, I'm glad to hear you say that. And, you know, the answer is that Dave Caldwell's not picking the coach by himself. I mean, that's not happening. And Dave alluded to that yesterday, that it will be Shad. It will be Tony Khan.
Mark Lamping.
Mark Lamping himself and other key possible personnel guy that are involved.
But to say that he is in heading up the coaching search.
That's right.
That's a better way to put it. And with that being granted, to me, that's the people who are still holding out hope that, hey, maybe once they get the coaching search underway and the season's over with, they're going to evaluate Dave and fire him. I think the evaluation's been done. The fact that he's being an integral part of hiring the next head coach, you don't put him in that position if you think you're not going to bring him back.
Well, I think the evaluation is never ending. You know,
understood.
Yeah, for a general manager that shares the same record as Gus Bradley.
Okay, but do you think that Dave Caldwell was a general manager in 2017?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I think it's already been decided.
Yeah, I think so. But
right.
I mean, understood.
He's going to continue to be evaluated. I just don't think there's anything that's going to change between now and the end of the year.
You know, here's something that could change, and we don't know that because you're talking about an owner, owners Tony Khan, Shad Khan, and team president Mark Lamping that are going to be involved in this. You know, you don't know what's going to happen in this process. You know, if there is somebody that blows the owner away. Shad away, and that person that blows him away says, here's what I need. You know, I need to have, you know, input on the final say of a roster. So that may change the dynamic for Dave Caldwell. You don't know. You know, I think until you get into that process, the dynamics of what is going to be going forward won't probably be determined. You know, because, I mean, that's, look, when you haven't won yet, I think everything is on the table. And so, you know, I wouldn't, for those that, you know, that say, well, I am uncomfortable with Dave Caldwell keeping his job. Look, Dave Caldwell is a great guy. And I think he's done a good job, not a great job. He hasn't won, you know, and that's what he was in charge of, is winning. And so let's just kind of, have a little patience here and see what happens, you know, because, you know, I think that anything is on the table.
All right, that's fine. And I understand your logic behind that. I just think I would be shocked that if it were to go that way.
Well, I want to say this too, is that, you know, when Dave was very humble in his press conference yesterday, mm-hmm. and said that, you know, I take responsibility, we all take responsibility. And he also, when was asked about, you know, to use that word again, is it going to be somebody that you're comfortable with, you know, and would it be somebody that would share your perspective and that you're a believer of Blake Bortles? Does it have to be somebody that would be a believer in Blake Bortles or any other personnel decisions for that matter? And Dave, I thought, had a great answer. He said that he doesn't want necessarily somebody that shares his perspective because he's looking for the right perspective that would guide this franchise to winning. And so I think that's the one thing that I always appreciated about Gus, and it's also something that I appreciate about Dave Caldwell, is that their egos aren't so big that they think that they know it all. You know, they are always looking for answers and input to make them better. You know, you go back a couple years ago when the end of the year press conference, I want to say it was last year, maybe it was the year before, but I think it was last year, when Dave talked about how they brought in an outside person to evaluate their roster. Because you know what? When you're so close to it, and he used this term yesterday, when you're so close to it, a lot of times your opinion, your views can be skewed a little bit because they're your picks. They're your acquisitions. And so he wanted to get an honest outside opinion, and he did that. And so I give him credit because it takes somebody that doesn't have a huge ego to do something like that. Dave wants what's best for this franchise.
I agree with that.
If it means, you know, giving up a little bit of something or whatever, he's all for it. I guarantee you that.
Let's get Curtis at the beaches up next here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, Curtis.
Hey, guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, the question I have relates to player evaluation and maybe coach evaluating coaching. And it goes to 4 years ago, I think, when there was a lot of hubbub, a lot of hoopla over the statistical side of the organization, the analytics. And we're just curious how Jeff feels about that piece. Is it, does it get evaluated as well? I mean, you mentioned like a Bill Belichick and Belichick, and whether or not he is that kind of a person in terms of evaluating, and he just seems like a wizard. But it's the intangibles. You measure the intangibles, what goes into it. And I'm just curious, does Tony Khan look at what he's doing and assess it?
Well, look, you know, I think Gus Bradley yesterday was asked about the analytics side of his tenure. And, you know, I think it was Ryan O'Halloran that asked him, you know, do you think that you relied maybe too much on it? You know, and Gus came out and said that, you know, look, analytics are great. Bill Belichick uses analytics. You know, everybody in the league nowadays uses analytics. And the nice thing about analytics is that for the most part, they're unemotional. You know, there's not an agenda behind analytics. Now, can somebody create analytics to give the impression of an agenda? Maybe. But for the most part, agents are unemotional. You know, I mean, and to have an unemotional opinion on things in football is a positive. I think analytics will always have a role in pro football.
Remember when Belichick, I mean, he's widely considered genius or whatever, you know, in football terms, one of the greatest coaches of all time, right? Remember when he went for it against Indianapolis, like his own 35-yard
yes.
line, like a fourth and
oh,
one?
Yeah.
He was right to do it because the numbers prove out that if you give the ball back to Peyton Manning in this circumstance with this field position and everything, the play didn't work, okay? But the decision to make that play was an analytically based decision. This is the guy who's revered. And who wouldn't want Bill Belichick coaching your football team? So that's an example of him using it. It didn't work in that particular
right.
instance, but the Patriots change their personnel and game plan week to week more than any team in the National Football League by far, right?
And you talk to coaches, Mike, and literally they are baffled when they go into a game against Bill Belichick.
What's he going to do?
They have no idea which playbook is pulled off the shelf.
Right, because he specifically set something up for what he thinks are your weaknesses, and he's going to try to exploit them all afternoon long.
And
if that's running it 50 times,
based off of
he'll do it.
Analytics.
Look, he won Super Bowls with run-heavy teams early on with Anton Smith, Corey Dillon, those guys, and then he also has excelled with pass-happy throw-it-55-time teams. You know, it doesn't matter to him. Whatever he thinks is the best on that particular Sunday, analytics plays a role in that. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. We'll get more of your calls and get some of your tweets and text messages answered as well. Questions for Jeff Lagerman on a Check the Tape Tuesday. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, This State in Football History.
All right, December 20th through the years, we go back to 1980. Jeff, see if you remember this when you're younger than I am, so you might not. NBC broadcast the Jets' 24-17 win over the Dolphins. You know why that broadcast was significant. It's the only one of its kind in NFL history.
No.
They used no announcers.
Really?
All they did was put graphics on the screen, tell you down and distance. You know,
was that like an experiment?
An experiment to see, hey, you know, did people kind of tune out the announcers, or what are they looking for? And it kind of flopped. People apparently liked the announcers, but they at least gave it a shot back in the day.
Give me John Madden.
You're a John Madden guy?
Love the guy.
I don't hate Madden. I was never a big-time devotee of Madden.
He was, as far as breaking down individual plays, he wasn't the best.
Right.
The energy that he put into it was unbelievable, and the description that he gave had a lot of energy. It wasn't necessarily accurate all the time. But I don't think there was a better analyst when it came to big picture analysis of games or teams.
Right. And he and Summerall were fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get to some famous birthdays for this date. How about the local product? The Bullet, Bob Hayes, born on this date in 1942. He passed away too young in the year 2002 at the age of 59, a three-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro with the Dallas Cowboys, a ridiculous yards per catch, 20 yards per catch in his career with the Cowboys, of course, an Olympic gold medalist as well, Hall of Fame inductee in 2009. He was the Cowboys pick in the seventh round of the 1964 NFL draft. The Broncos picked him in the 14th round of the AFL draft in the same year, and the rest is history as he signed on with the Cowboys. Likewise, Nate Newton signed on with the Cowboys after being drafted by them. He was born on this date in 1961, 55 years old today. Six-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman, two-time first-team All-Pro, and a second-team member of the All-1990 squad. And 2002 NFL MVP Rich Gannon, born on this date in 1965, a four-time Pro Bowler with two All-Pro appearances. Rich Gannon, 51 years old. That's This Date in Football History, brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or you're just in the market for a family dentist this new year coming up, 620-9225 is the number. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com, and you'll get a complete look at all their comprehensive care services there. That was This Date in Football History.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, last night on Monday Night Football, not a pretty showing for the Washington Redskins, 25-16, their loss to the Carolina Panthers. And head coach Jay Gruden said something you guys don't hear much from coaches at any level in football, saying, quote, we were flat out out-coached. There's no question about that. We weren't as ready as I would like to have been. We did not execute like I would like to have seen. That falls on my shoulders. And he was still spreading some criticism to his players, even to Kirk Cousins, who struggled last night. Gruden said, quote, I think he was having trouble seeing some of the coverages, and when he did see them, I don't know if he just didn't have clear throws at them. I don't know. We'll wait and see, so I don't know. So taking some blame himself and also dishing it to his quarterback last night. The NFL announced yesterday that fans will be able to see the 2017 NFL Scouting Combine in Indy for free in person. Fans will be able to enjoy several opportunities during March 2nd through the 5th Combine, including watching the bench press, viewing prospects, press conferences and interviews, and autograph sessions with NFL legends. As if fans at home watching the NFL Network didn't get enough of the Combine, they can go see it in person for free. Two more stories here, guys. The number one overall draft pick, Jared Goff, has been mediocre at best, and Rams interim head coach John Fossil is already thinking about ways to give reps to third-string quarterback Sean Mannion, saying, quote, we'd love to get Sean some reps in the situation like last week where, you know, something happens to Jared, whether it be he can't find his helmet or, you know, his shoelace breaks. Get Sean in there for a little bit of work, which would be good to see Sean. Cases have performed well when he's been in there when required, but it would be good for the team to get some looks at Sean. So kind of throwing out a joke there about getting some reps for Sean Mannion, but it kind of tells you the situation that Jared Goff has been in.
If I'm Goff, I'm hiding my shoes now. I'm not letting anybody near him.
What was he doing on that play?
I don't know.
I mean, come on.
You mean where he got clocked?
By Richard Sherman?
Get out of bounds.
I mean,
first of all, there's a hold on the play. Now, I don't know if he could tell. It's kind of behind him, but I almost feel like there's a sixth sense you need to have on some of those plays, you know, that thing's coming back, but maybe he didn't see it whatsoever, but still. Let's get out of bounds. He wasn't going to score. I don't know if he's trying to show his toughness or what he's doing. Is that it, Tyler? Are we all done?
No, one more. Goff actually remains in the concussion protocol. After taking that shot from Sherman, he did participate in yesterday's walkthrough, so the team expects him to clear protocol. But still looking to get some reps for the third stringer, Sean Mannion. One more story. The Texans' savior, Tom Savage, finished 23 of 36 passing, 260, no touchdowns, no turnovers, and the backup led the Texans to 5 scoring drives. And head coach Bill O'Brien said, it feels like Tom Savage gives us the best chance to win, so he'll be starting on Sunday, or on Saturday.
Yes, he will. They play Cincinnati in the late Saturday game, the 8:30 game on Saturday night. By the way, the Combine will go the way of Media Day at the Super Bowl. In the first year, they'll let you in for free, and they'll gauge what the interest level is, and then they'll set the price point based on the interest level. And I believe it's now $25 to attend Media Day, something like that.
I'm trying to figure out what's so attractive about watching the Combine.
Well, you know what? I sit here, Jeff, and we see practices. We see all these things. And I do think at times we forget how special it is getting up close and personal with the National Football League. Most people don't have that. And granted, the Combine is not football, but it is an event that people do like to watch. You know, you recognize all the different things. You recognize the players that are there. I think there'll be 10 to 20,000 people that show up to watch it.
I think it's great that the interest is there, and I will tell people that are thinking about going to the Combine. Indianapolis is a great city to visit. It's very tight, I guess you could say, you know, the downtown area. A lot of things to do, a couple really good restaurants. It might be well worth the trip as long as you don't get snowed in.
And if you get 10,000 people, which doesn't sound like a lot in a football stadium, but if you get 10,000 in, and they pay $25 a ticket, that's $250,000, right? And it's, you know, The league is always looking for additional revenue sources. Why wouldn't they, right?
That's not even a week's pay for the commissioner, is it?
No, I don't think it is. Maybe it might be. I don't know. Would it be? No, probably not, right?
I don't know.
He makes – they don't have to post his salary
anymore. It would not be a week's pay for the commissioner.
No, because he's making like $40 million,
yeah.
Right? So, yeah, it'd be a couple days' pay for the commissioner. It's good work if you can get it. So, all right, let's see what we got here on the phone lines as we wrap up this segment at 641.
Hey, one thing, let me jump in on Shad Khan's statement. I know you read it, and when I read it, I thought it just oozed great respect for Gus Bradley and total class, the way he did that, and the way his wording was on that release. Showing great respect for Gus.
Sure.
And saying, you know, also at the same time that, it, you know, using the term regrettably clear that they needed to make a change. You know, so I thought that he handled it well. A lot of people say, well, you know, if you're going to let somebody go, you know, do it in person. But, you know, Shad had talked to Gus, and then Shad is going to meet Gus at some point, you know, when he is available in a face-to-face situation. And I just – you know, there's just not many owners in the NFL that would have handled it like that. And I think for the fans of the Jaguars, including me, very proud of the way he handled that and very proud that he's the owner of this franchise. I thought it was just
– yeah.
It was great.
Oh.
It, in a situation which is never great, I just thought that it was worth saying.
All right. I'm sure Gus appreciated that as well. At least, you know, I don't think Gus took it negatively. A few people did, saying, hey, this is disrespectful. You're making him get on the team plane and all that. He addressed that yesterday.
Yep.
I don't think that's the case. All right, we got a few on the text line here at 641-1010. Text line driven by Duval Ford. They'd like to hear an opinion on Mike Glennon from Tampa coming in for some quarterback competition. Not a big name guy, but a strong-armed, accurate quarterback who doesn't have really bad career stats, playing for bad Tampa Bay teams earlier in his career. What are your quick thought on Mike Glennon?
My quick thought is that I'm all for bringing in competition with a strong-arm, accurate quarterback, but I don't think that Mike Glennon is in that category. Mike Glennon has had a number of years to really show the Tampa Bay Buccaneers what he is, and other teams evaluate him. And from my eyes, looking at Mike Glennon, you know, we see him in the preseason, you know, so you get quite a good look at him in person, and he has not impressed me whatsoever.
Okay, there you go. That you asked, and you got it. Here's one that says, Tom Coughlin's records were mediocre at best year by year. He won two Super Bowls on two fluke plays. It seemed every offseason he was on the hot seat. I would –
keywords there. He won two Super Bowls.
He won two Super Bowls.
The rest of it is all
the Tyree play was a fluke play to pin the ball to your helmet. There's no question that was a fluke play. That doesn't mean they couldn't have won the game. That wasn't the final play of the game, by the way. I think it was a third down. Mm-hmm. Manning escaped the sack, chucked it downfield, made that catch. They still had to go on and score the touchdown. The point of the matter was they're in the Super Bowl playing the 18-0 New England Patriots for the second time in about a month. They had gone toe-to-toe with them in the final week of the season. And here they were toe-to-toe with them again. So, yes.
Toe-to-toe in a game that didn't matter to them.
In the last week of the season. Right. And I think they said at the time, Tom Coughlin did afterwards, we wanted to prove to ourselves and prove to everyone else that we could play with this football team and we're going to approach it that way. And I think that gave them confidence going into the Super Bowl. But, yeah, plays, Super Bowl's turn. Look, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl in part because on the way he had the tuck play that – I think it was the correctly applied rule, but you could say that's a fluke play, right? Only 10 times did that occur during that season in the regular season, and here it was the 11th time it's happening. That's kind of a fluke. So, you know, the throw of Eli Manning to Mario Manningham is not a fluke play. That's just a great play by your quarterback. The guy made a great throw. I don't understand why that's a fluke in any sense of the word. It's not. It's just a phenomenal play under pressure. And again, if he doesn't complete that, doesn't mean they're going to lose the game. That just allowed them to run out the clock. They were winning the game.
How about the Patriots winning the Super Bowl on a fluke play where the Seattle Seahawks decided to throw it instead of running?
There you go. You can do this all day long. Right. Granted, was Coughlin on the hot seat? Part of that is the fact that you've got like seven major daily newspapers in New York. The media, the feeding frenzy in New York City. You play there, Jeff. You know
it's
what it's like. Right? And here we are. We've got the local paper. We got radio. We got a few things, and it's not – there's nowhere near the pressure on the organization. Even if we constantly came on negative, negative, negative every day, it couldn't equal what you get in these major markets.
No, I mean, it's for anybody to say that you win a Super Bowl on a fluke play, there's too many things that have to happen besides one play to get there and to accomplish that, and it's disrespectful to the game to say that it was a fluke play.
All right, that's their opinion. Anyway, I disagree with it. Another one on the text line, driven by Duval Ford. I wonder what Jeff's opinion is on what happened to the pass rush over the last few games.
You know, I thought that this past game it was non-existent for the most part. I thought that Yannick Ngakoue had some very good rushes where he was, I mean, literally right there as the ball was gone. The rest of the guys up front didn't do a good enough job. You know, and you have a Texans offensive line that – the best player is Dwayne Brown, the left tackle. And Ngakoue got a couple good rushes on him, but for the most part, Ngakoue was most effective when he was on the right side, or the defensive left side or the offensive right side, where he was going against Clark. And he's got two games to get a Jaguars rookie sack record. You know, so to be able to accomplish that, that's pretty good stuff now. Dante Fowler got hurt in that game and was used very sparingly at the end. I think it was a hip pointer that it was reported during the game. I saw him walk off the field after one play, and I was like, well, he's hurt. And then I saw that he wasn't playing on later in the game, and I was like, well, he's just hurt. Hopefully he's okay. He's got a lot to learn yet. You know, and he's about what we thought. You know, what is he, 2.5 sacks, I think, on the season. He had one that he missed. But there's no question in a game like that with a young passer, an offensive line that's pretty good, but not great. You'd like to get more pressure and affect a young passer, and they weren't able to do that. That part of it was very disappointing, in that you weren't able to. You got a lead. You know, we talked about earlier about, you know, the defense taking the next step. Well, playing with a lead is part of the area where you can get turnovers, takeaways, and influence a game. Well, there you were. And you weren't able to accomplish that. That was disappointing. I thought Malik Jackson played okay, not his best game. He needs to be better in the interior. I thought Sendarek Marks could have been better as a pass rusher, but clearly not good enough.
All right, don't ask if you don't want to know. He's Jeff Logman. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live at EverBank. We'll come back, hit up the text line a little bit more, and also take your calls if you're so inclined at 641-1010. We'll check in on Twitter as well. Just send your questions in. For Logs, as the coaching vacancy has been filled in the interim by Doug Marrone, where will the Jags go for a full-time answer? We'll continue to discuss it right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jeff Lagerman lays down the law. Jeff Lagerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Lagerman.
All right, Tuesdays go quickly. A couple more segments here. Mike Dempsey with Jeff Logeman. Check the tape Tuesdays, what we usually call it. Now it's just, I don't know what it is.
Check the press conference.
Sure. Check that tape. Check the audio tape Tuesday and see what those guys had to say yesterday. Let's get a phone call in here. We've got plenty of questions on the text line and on Twitter and on the Facebook page. We'll try to get to as many as we can. But Eddie in Orange Park is up next. Hello, Eddie.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Morning. Doing well. What's up?
Jeff, let me ask you a question. Do you think we're better off with a 70-year-old Tom Coughlin as a manager or as general manager or as a head football coach and then bring in an offensive mind like a Shanahan or a McDaniels as an offensive coach?
For me, Tom Coughlin is a football coach, and I think that is his strong suit, you know, and – you know, and why do we always have to say 71-year-old Tom Coughlin? Tom Coughlin's in great shape. Tom Coughlin's mind is sharp as a tack. You know, so is this age discrimination?
I mean, the next president's about the same age, right? Which is more high-stress job? Come on.
Look, Tom's a good football coach. He's got an excellent offensive mind. And for me, that's where his strength is. He had stint as a general manager / head coach, and you could argue either way of how good it was or how bad it was.
Sure,
argue him as a coach.
What would a VP of football operations do here that the GM doesn't already do, and how would that? I've always thought that would be a weird dynamic. If, you know, for instance, I don't think Dave Caldwell would be hiring him, because then if he's VP of football operations, that would mean Coughlin would come in as his boss.
Well, I mean,
right? You don't usually have to interview your own boss.
It goes back to what I was saying, is that, you know, you're not going to know the makeup of exactly what the structure may be, you know, through this process. You know, the Denver Broncos have something very similar. John Elway is the vice president, or president of football operations, and then he has a general manager underneath of him. You know, so.
But that general manager did not hire John Elway.
No, he did not.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it would be a weird thing to be
That's
like.
That's why I'm saying that you got to remember who's doing the interview process here. It's the
it's
Shad Khan, Tony Khan, and Mark Lamping is involved as well with Dave Caldwell. So, you know, you don't necessarily know what is going to happen until it actually happens.
I don't think it's 100% out of the realm of possibility that he comes in some kind of role like that. I just don't think it's the likeliest, and I agree with you. Tom Coughlin's going to the Hall of Fame based on his coaching resume. That's what I think this team needs desperately. I don't think we've been sitting here for the last 4 years saying, man, if we only had a competent VP of football operations, this whole thing would be so much better off. You know, I'm not trying to mock the situation. I just think, it's so clear-cut that – let the guy do what he does best if you're going to hire him.
Well, I think that, number one, his greatest attribute is being a football coach, you know. And number two, would he be able to provide great input in other areas? Absolutely, yes. And so what would the title of that be? You know, I don't know. You know, but here's the thing. You want him first and foremost, or you would want Tom Coughlin as a football coach. And you would also want to be able to utilize his experience in other areas as well.
All right, we got some interesting ones on the Facebook page. This one from Dalton, bear with me here. He says, you see mature players like Posluszny, Mercedes, and Roy Miller excel under Gus Bradley's self-driven, self-motivated culture. This is what Dalton has to say. But you saw at least two undisciplined plays per game from young, immature players like Dante Fowler Jr., Marquise Lee, and Jalen Ramsey. Do you think that's attributable to Gus not being hard enough on these guys?
I think that's attributable to exactly what you just said, you know, and what he just said.
They're young and undisciplined.
They're young players, you know, and that is typically a characteristic and a trait of young players where they need to get to the point where they don't do that anymore. You know, and we're talking about first, second-year players, you know.
But so, did you guys have a lot of that when Coughlin was running things with an iron fist back in the day?
But probably not to that, you know, to the level that it's happened this year. But
is it somewhat a generational thing too?
Just maybe,
like, you know what I mean? Like
maybe
the younger.
I mean, Tom Coughlin had a little bit of that with when he was in New York, right?
Right, exactly. With Odell and
sure.
So some
it's
of
not
that
like
goes
he's
on.
Immune to it.
Okay, so but all right, interesting question that I thought from Dalton here. Here's one from Ewan, or I think it's Ewan. I'd like the Jags to create another Breeze River situation by drafting Mitch Trubisky. Have Blake compete with him and see if Blake can turn it around. And if not, we have a young, talented guy waiting in the wings. What are your thoughts on a scenario, whether it's Trubisky or any other?
I don't think it's the name that matters so much as it is the scenario that he's suggesting. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes.
So even as high as a top five pick?
Look, I said this a couple years ago, and I got laughed at by some people. And I said, you draft a quarterback every year. Why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you consider that?
Sure, but most teams don't draft a quarterback that highly. Now, I understand the certain scenario. You totally get it, okay? But you'd be cool even if that top five pick then loses a competition to Bortles. Either way, you feel like it's important enough. Let's invest two top five picks there in a span of 4 years.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we get one
absolutely
good guy out of it. All right?
Absolutely.
Thank you for that question. This one from Brian. Do you think Bortles is just a very good backup, and do you think he's cost three men their jobs? Two offensive coordinators and the head coach, obviously.
Yeah, look, it's is there any hope for Blake Bortles? Look, you know, the one thing, and I've said this before about Blake Bortles, he's tough, he's competitive, he's durable. He has some leadership qualities that I think last year really shone through. You know, but there are some things that you got to be concerned about with Blake, the mechanics thing, the accuracy thing. I mean, there's no question that you have to be able to look at that and be real and be realistic that these are concerning. And so going forward, that's why the previous question or the scenario that was laid out to us, I'm all for that. But, you know, look, I don't think that Blake Bortles is a project that you just throw in the trash can and say, we've moved on. You don't do that. A couple of reasons why. One is that he may be your best option going forward, but you have to look at other options going forward as well.
Speaking of options, I'm not picking his up if I'm Dave Caldwell. I'm letting him, you know, he's got, I think, May 3rd.
No, you absolutely do not pick up that option.
Thank you. I just wanted to get your opinion on that because not everyone agrees with that, but I think that's probably the majority feeling. Let him go in there and compete. The best problem to have is he outperforms everyone's expectations and he's deserving of a top-of-the-market contract.
Well, that's a nice problem.
You know what? Slap the franchise tag on him and work that deal out.
That's
right?
Exactly right.
You'd be very happy
if you didn't use the option on extending Luke Joeckel, you do not use it on Blake Bortles.
Granted. Joshua, this is a key question here. Okay, listen closely. Do you think that Doug Marrone looks like a Baldwin brother?
A Doug Baldwin brother?
Doug Marrone looked like a Baldwin brother.
Yeah, he kind of does.
A little bit, right?
Bigger version, though.
Yeah, a little older, maybe uncle, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Got a little bit of that to him.
A Baldwin uncle. All right, there you go. That was a pressing one we had to get in. I brought this to your attention. Mike Silver tweeting this out yesterday. He said, over the offseason, Tom Coughlin lobbied Gus Bradley to let him join his staff, likely as a coaching consultant, according to a source. That was Michael Silver reporting. Back in the day, Michael Silver would report. He was the guy who was always saying, hey, Wayne Weaver's got this team on the block. Might have been more right than
maybe
the Jacksonville faithful wanted to admit. But what do you make of that? Have you heard this, or do you think that's plausible?
First of all, I have not heard that. Number two, though, I do know that Gus Bradley and Tom Coughlin do have a very good relationship, and that Tom Coughlin has spent time with Gus Bradley and vice versa, to where, you know, look, Gus has always been one of those guys, which I think is incredible, and that his ego is not big, and he is very humble, and he loves to be in the constant search for information and education to make himself better. And he had reached out to Tom. Tom reached out to him, kind of back and forth a little bit. And so, wouldn't surprise me if that were accurate. But at the same token, I don't know how much sense that would have made for Gus, having that kind of dynamic. If it was true, then Michael Silver might be right on. Michael Silver usually has pretty good information. And Michael Silver is really good in New Orleans. Me and Michael Silver had a night together in New Orleans.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, that's a story for the summertime, Oof. I think. I'll tell you mine one day, too.
I'm not young anymore, Mike.
Let's see. Coughlin's last 3 years. This is one from at Belford 93, Robert Belford. Coughlin's last 3 years, 6-10, 6-10, 7-9, 71 years old. How long will he be here? 2 years? Going back to the mediocrity. A lot of people like Josh McDaniels, who got fired, I think, after a 3-9 start in his second year with the Denver Broncos, a guy who was the leading proponent to draft Tim Tebow in the first round. I just don't get – I mean, yeah, he's doing a great job as an offense coordinator for the Patriots. So would I. Right? Hey, Tom, go do your thing. I mean, honestly, how hard is that job?
Let's measure how Tom Brady did without Josh McDaniel at the helm. I think he did pretty good.
He did okay with it before he got there.
He did pretty good.
He managed to survive and hang on long enough, keep his head in the game.
If you're a coach, you always want to make the best decisions, right? And when you take jobs. And the best decision that you would make is to take a job that has great players. And Josh McDaniel has been the beneficiary, there's no question, of having a great player in Tom Brady. Multi-generational player. And Tom Brady. And so, then the interesting thing is that, out of all the Belichick tree coaches, how many of them have had great success? But maybe the most successful one was the one we saw this past Sunday in Bill O'Brien, who's had great success at Penn State.
Right.
And you know what? The job that he's done in Houston, I have great respect for the job that he's done in Houston. I think he's done a very good job on a football team that really has not had anything at the quarterback position.
Right. He's taking advantage of a mediocre division, but he's taking advantage of it.
That's exactly right.
We'd love for the Jags to be able to take advantage of a mediocre division.
I like him.
So,
I really do.
But outside of him, it's not been
Romeo
Crennel, list.
Josh McDaniel. Who else?
Charlie Weiss.
Charlie Weiss was an utter and complete failure. Notre Dame, failure.
Right. Florida.
Failure.
Yeah.
Was it Kansas State?
I think so.
Failure.
One of those two.
Failure.
Midwest area.
But he made a lot of money off of Bill Belichick.
Look, I'll say this, though, about Josh McDaniels, Kyle Shanahan, or anybody else.
Let me say this real quick about Kyle Shanahan. I think he's got, obviously, great experience in football. He's been around it his whole life. But I think Kyle Shanahan, there's a maturity level that I don't think he's attained yet to where he's ready.
Okay. We'll find out, right? I think the fact that he hasn't been a head coach is going to factor in as well. Mm-hmm. I do think that's an important part of the search. But my point is going to be, I know who my clear-cut lead candidate is. I know, you know, I think you need to pursue him. And if there could be stumbling blocks, legitimate stumbling blocks to Tom Coughlin coming in and being the head coach. I don't know what those are.
Here's one stumbling block that is not there. His wife would love to be back.
Oh, I grant it. I get it. Okay. But to finish the thought, I'm all for that happening. If Dave Caldwell makes an honest effort to vet Tom Coughlin for this job and determines he's not the guy, I'm not going to be militant about it. You know what I mean? I want the Jags to have success. So if it's not the guy I pick, okay. Clean slate, buddy. Josh McDaniels, come in and win 12, please. I don't care who you are. Win. I think Tom Coughlin is the guy to get them there. That's my opinion. I could be wrong, but even if I'm right and he goes a different direction, maybe he hires David Shaw. I don't know who he's going to hire, right? In fact, I don't think it will be Tom Coughlin. I think the odds are against it.
Might not be.
Because there are a lot of other candidates out there. I think it makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. I would just ask Jaguar fans. You can do whatever you like, but from my perspective, give the guy the opportunity when he comes in to prove whether he's the right or wrong guy for the job. If he doesn't, if he's not the guy you would have chosen, like someone said on the text line a minute ago, Todd Haley is hands down the best candidate for the job.
Is he?
Why hands down? Why is he so much better than some of these other candidates that we're discussing here? Why is he so much better than Mike Smith, who did a terrific job in Atlanta, the most successful coach in that franchise history? Just to name one guy, right? Mm-hmm. Why is he so much better than that? And you may have your reasons why you believe that. But if you don't get the guy who's at the top of your wish list, and this is for me included, let's all hope that they make the right decision, right? Because ultimately, it's not about us being right. It's about the Jaguars winning football games and hopefully contending for a Super Bowl championship in the not-too-distant future.
Wait a minute. Mike Dempsey's got a little humility there. I like that.
No, look, I've always felt that. Look, I give my opinion. My opinion's not always right. I believe in my opinion. I think Tom Coughlin, I will debate anybody who wants to argue that Tom Coughlin's not the most qualified candidate. Yeah. But if he doesn't get the job, Jeff, I'm not going to sit here and pout like a baby and go, you should have hired Coughlin. See, I told you I should have hired Coughlin. Let's at least let it play out for a season, right? I mean.
So you're saying you agree with Dave Caldwell and you want what's right?
I want the Jags to win. That's it, period.
Yeah, that's right.
Win. And I said anything short of Satan, I'm down with, man. honestly, we had a couple people respond to that and say, I'm down with that too, all right? There's nobody off the board as far as I'm concerned. Whoever it is, I don't care if they can never speak a word to me. Doesn't matter. Just win games. Don't we all just want this franchise to drag itself out of the malaise that it's been in for the last God knows how many years and just win football games?
Well, there's so many good things. I mean, the fan base and fans have been incredibly patient. They have been great. And, you know, and there's been so many good things. You know, the stadium, you know, the Daly's Place that's going up. I mean, there's so many good things happening with this football team and the facility itself. And you just want to have the on-the-field product marry and match. And I look forward to when that happens, because it will.
All right, we got to take a time out here. We'll come back. Still have time for a few of your phone calls if you'd like to get in. But trust me, we got plenty of questions coming in in a variety of ways. It's a Tuesday with Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony on assignment. He should be back with us tomorrow morning. We're live at EverBank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jaguars General Manager Dave Caldwell elaborated on the decision to fire Gus Bradley immediately following the 21-20 loss to the Texans on Sunday.
You guys know Gus and I had a unique relationship, and it was built on trust and support. And once we made that decision, I couldn't lie to him, and I respect him too much. And now that we're going to start a process of hiring a new head coach, it wasn't fair to him or his family to have him here in the building.
This has been Jags Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
And just when it hit me, somebody turned around and started playing that fucking music. Hey, man, here I am, a man on your scene. I can give you what you want. You got to come home with me. Hustling, hustling. Hustling, hustling. Oh, where you going? Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, man, here I am. I love it, man. Honestly, If you're going to go through the coaching staff without knowing that that was Doug Marrone and pick the least likely guy, you know, based on
that's
his
Doug
general
Marrone.
Reputation, that's Doug Marrone from June, mic'd up at a practice with the Jags, singing along. So, you know, just because you're
that's his era now.
It is.
Yeah, because that's my era.
But he has a no-nonsense reputation, right? And there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of fun. I think even Tom Coughlin probably had a little
Tom
bit Coughlin more fun.
Tom Coughlin has never done that.
No, he's never done that. I mean, let's not be crazy here. But
Tom Coughlin's idea of getting wild and crazy is wearing white sneakers with a pair of slacks.
Okay. Yeah, trust me. I agree with you. TC, I doubt we're going to have if Tom Coughlin were to be hired, I doubt we bring back the speakers at practice for music nonstop. That's my
he
guess.
He had speakers at practice.
Did he?
But didn't play music.
Oh, right.
What he played.
To acclimate you to the crowd noise.
Yeah, just the sound.
The return of the little white box on the sideline. I'm sure that's what the media is most looking forward to if Tom did come back. Remember
that? It was like, oh, yeah, the penalty box.
He had the penalty box. And if you didn't stand in there, you couldn't attend practice. And what he would do then, this is when the fields were on the opposite side of the stadium, he'd practice on the far field. And he'd have you in the box 2 fields away.
Yeah.
And you couldn't move. You weren't allowed to leave the box.
Yeah, when I made the transition from playing to, you know, doing Jaguars media – and doing media for Fox at that time, I'd go to practice, and I was in the penalty box too, and he'd always come over, you know, kind of say hi to everybody for a minute, and I would always make sure that I had 1 foot in and 1 foot out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'd
just
always
stick it to
him.
Yeah,
and I'd just messing with him, you know, and I'd be going, am I okay? And I'd take my foot and put it across inside the line, and I'd say, am I not okay?
Uh-huh.
just to mess with him a little
bit. I'll deal with the box if that's what it takes. Tom, hopefully you've moved on from that. This one... logs in from Demetrius at Have the Compass on Twitter. Have you started watching any tape of the top collegiate draft prospects?
No, and I'll do that after the Super Bowl. And plenty of time for that.
All right, let's see.
The one guy that I can't wait to see, and I loved his comments this week, was the defensive end from Texas A&M.
Miles Garrett.
And then him saying that he's going to play in the bowl game, you know, because obviously the two other guys opted not to play.
Right, Fournette
in the bowl game.
And McCaffrey.
Which, you know what, I respect their decision. And I mean, I totally understand it, and I'm not saying that one way is the right way, but I also have great respect for a guy that comes out and says, you know what, I'm playing, you know. And
hopefully for his sake, he comes out okay.
Yeah, and Smith, the Notre Dame guy, the Dallas Cowboys,
Jalen
now came
Smith,
out and said if he could do it all over again, that he would do the same thing.
Easy to say because he can't do it
sure
all
it
over
is.
Again. I don't know.
Because
you
he can't do it all over
right,
again.
Right. If you could do it all over again and know what the outcome was going to be, I doubt he would do that.
If he could get into that time machine from Back to the Future and he literally is looking at the opportunity to go back and make the decision all over again, I bet you he might reconsider.
Forget that, man. Go back and buy some Google stock. When
it,
you know, let's say this one here, at Tony underscore C 1967. Question for Jeff. Because of the personnel the Jags have on defense, will they be inclined to hire a coach that will keep this defensive scheme? And I will go further and say, you know, Todd Wash's name got brought up, for instance. I got the sense that again, Dick Cole is not going to push this on anybody, but in a perfect world, he would like to have an offensive-minded head coach come in or a guy who has a clear picture of who he wants as an offensive coordinator to lead this team, and he would love to have Todd Wash remain. And as he said, he'll make his recommendation. It's out of his hands. The coaching staff belongs to the head coach, but I could definitely see that being a possibility that Todd Wash is back to run basically the same defense or something similar to it.
Yes, because, you know, continuity is always good, you know, whether it be offensive or defensive. And offensive continuity is not possible, I don't believe, going forward. But I think defensive continuity is a possibility. And the other thing that you look at, which, you know, it's not going to be a factor in the decision-making process, but, look, it's out there and that – you know, these coaches all have contracts that run through 2017. So then whoever gets hired has the opportunity to retain under contract the guys that are currently employed. And it would save ownership money by keeping certain key components or valuable components that are viewed by the new head coach.
Who other than Todd Wash? Dwayne Walker, maybe? I mean,
I think there's some really good candidates. I don't want to go into the names at this point, but I think there are some really good candidates on the staff to keep.
All right, let's see here. Question about Dante Fowler. Did he get hurt or benched late in the game? How was his play overall?
Hurt.
He did get hurt.
It was
a hip pointer.
How
do you think he played this week?
Okay.
It's okay. It would have been more impressive.
Well, let me say this. Not great.
If he could have hung on and made the sack, you know, that.
Yeah, there would have been an impact play, but I think overall it was just okay.
All right. Let's see what we got.
I expect so much, you know, out of him. And I think going ahead into the future with Dante Fowler, you know, he is so much more athletic when he stays in a two-point stance and he can see things. You know, the pass rush thing, you know, that might not be, you know, something that he needs to do all the time. And I'm not saying that he needs to all of a sudden change positions and go to linebacker, but in that defense that they run right now, there are a lot of situations where he's dropping into coverage. I think he can have an impact and also in other ways besides as a pass rusher, because right now he is not a dominant pass rusher, and understandably so because it's his first year and he's got a lot of things to learn at being a pass rusher. But he's so dynamic and so athletic, and that if he can be a factor in other areas as well, they need to utilize him in them.
All right. As Tyler pointed out, Marcus Rush, who they signed off the 49ers practice squad today, they made way by putting Jeremiah Patasi on IR with the ankle injury, so he's out. Rush led the NFL in sacks in the preseason, so there's that. You know, I know, I understand it's a preseason, but I'd rather have him have production when he gets given an opportunity at 18.5 as a four-year starter at Michigan State as well.
That's so pretty good.
They're trying to find somebody to.
Well, you know, look, you never have enough pass rushers.
Understood.
You know, and this football team needs, you know, you got two pass rushers that are a little similar in that Ngakoue and Dante Fowler are these fast, you know, twitchy outside linebacker types. You know, you'd like to be able to add an edge rusher that is more along the lines of what the Dallas Cowboys, boy, I watched that guy the other night, Mike, and I can't remember his name, 95.
Oh, gosh, Irving. I don't know what his first name is. Kedah Irving. He dominated the fourth quarter.
Oh,
I mean, just owned the fourth quarter.
Wow.
He had that. Look, if I had arms like that, I'd tie that little thing around my bicep, too. All right. Yeah. And I would just walk around shirtless all day.
And he was going against, you know, Gosser Chairless, which is clearly no longer
but he
a
was
good football
like
player.
A
but,
he drum.
Was, but that's what you want, right?
Oof.
I mean, when you got a player like that, he needs to be beaten up, and he did that. And he's a different type of pass rusher than what Ngakoue and Dante Fowler is. He's got some power to him.
Big-time power.
You know, and the other guy that, you know, that I was so excited to watch was the draft pick from the small school this year, the seventh-round pick. What was his name, Mike? Gosh, he's on IR. Tore his Achilles back in the off-season workouts, rookie minicamp.
Oh, yeah, from Montana.
No, it wasn't Montana. No, he ended up with the Cleveland Browns.
Oh. Who am I thinking of? You caught me unaware.
Well, I can't believe that.
I know. Isn't that pathetic?
It's been so long since I've said his name, I've done forgot it.
Scooby,
is that
right?
Terrible? I'm going to find it, though.
No. You're talking about the guy that the Jags drafted.
Yes.
You're saying, right?
Yes.
Let's
Jonathan
see.
Woodard.
There you go.
There it is.
Him?
Yeah, that's Woodard. Woodard. All right.
I don't know when the last time I've spoken Jonathan Woodard's name.
I can't wait to see him. Hopefully he makes a full recovery from the Achilles. To see some of the guys that recently in the National Football League that made full and complete recoveries from Achilles injuries is encouraging. But watching his college tape, I just remember watching his college tape. I've never been more excited about a seventh-round pick.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Logs, we've got Malik Jackson coming up at the top of the hour, so we're about to say goodbye. He's going to join the Midday Chalk, as he does every Tuesday. Merry Christmas to you.
And to you.
I'll see you before then, but for this radio program, we wish you Merry Christmas. And I'm going to wish you a special Merry Christmas from Little Grandma, who has got to be your biggest fan out there. She tweets about you all the time. So if you want to wish her Merry Christmas, I'm
Merry
sure
Christmas, Little Grandma.
Little Grandma. Jeff Loggeman's number one
fan. And to
fan.
All the listeners, Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Fat Tony should be back with me tomorrow as well. He's on assignment today. So for Jeff Loggeman, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, thanks everybody who tuned in today. Certainly a lot more to talk about than we've had in recent weeks with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Whatever way they go, whatever decision Dave Caldwell and the rest of the Brain Trust make, let's just hope it's the right one, whether it's the one we want initially or not. That does it for us here on Jaguars Today. Back again live tomorrow at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.